Gillian, you've described the, well, I guess the pain, just the economic pain that a lot of people will be suffering as a result of this war. But there are winners, aren't there? And I wonder if you could tell me about who's going to be, yeah, winning, I guess.
So Russia has been getting a lot of headlines because obviously any extra financial gain for the Kremlin is fueling their war machine. I would caution and say that a lot of their infrastructure has been quite badly damaged in the war. They're not able to export as much as I'm sure they would like to fully take advantage of the situation. But certainly as one of the biggest oil and gas producers in the world, they will benefit from that. The U.S. will be benefiting as well, perhaps in a more long-term way, because I think countries, particularly in sort of South Asian countries, which are heavily reliant on the Gulf at the moment, will in future be thinking about diversifying their supplies. So they may well be looking to the US for sources of energy. That's going to be very little comfort to Americans right now with rising energy bills. The other big winner, which no one really talks about, is Norway, because although they are a major, Europe's largest supplier of gas via pipelines.
They don't use much, do they?
They don't use much themselves.
They don't use much of their own gas. Right, yeah. What a great
example. They've
got
their own energy challenges, but I think Norway is in a position to see its revenues from oil and gas increase quite a lot whilst being relatively insulated from the crisis itself.
Gillian, finally, you've described this as the greatest oil supply shock in history. But how does it compare to the 70s when the oil crisis led to a three-day week, fuel rationing, queues? How will the impact of what's happening now be felt in a similar way, if at all? And what lessons have been learned, again, if any?
There'll be a lot of people who remember the 1970s oil crisis.
During today's extended power cuts, it was almost impossible for many families who depend upon electricity to cook or to heat and light their homes. It was meals by candlelight, but only for those who bought them before supplies ran out.
It's now almost. And in some ways, it was maybe more impactful to people's lives than the one we're seeing today, where everything feels slightly at arm's length. At that time, there wasn't very much green energy. There was oil, there was gas. That was really important to the economy. We would have seen people, fuel rationing. And so for the West, it really felt cataclysmic at the time. And we saw governments responding to that, to guard against that ever happening again. We've seen countries like Denmark, which was once an oil and gas producer, turn to wind power. And now they are one of the major wind power players in the world. We've also seen great examples of our neighbours in France, for example. They moved very decidedly towards nuclear power after the 1970s oil crisis, and they are a lot less exposed than a country like the UK. Maybe in a few decades' time, we'll look back at this crisis and see it as that watershed moment where the green energy agenda really took on its momentum. I'm just worried, I suppose, because energy costs matter if you're building wind turbines.
Mm.
It still impacts your ability to carry out all these major projects.
To create the infrastructure, to have that silver lining, or rather green lining.
Exactly. Yeah. If something's bad for the economy, it's bad for the green economy. So it's a short-term, I have some short-term cynicism about whether we will be able to make a case for a sort of green resurgence in the wake of the crisis. But I do also think that the journey that we're on is clear and it won't be derailed. And we are moving towards a cleaner future.
That's one hope, that there will be one good thing to come out of this, but obviously it feels quite a way away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Gillian, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
That was Gillian Ambrose, The Guardian's energy correspondent. You can read her reporting on this story, and you should, and her analysis and more at theguardian.com. And that's it for today. This episode was presented by me, Noshin Iqbal. It was produced by Tom Glasser and Ned Carter-Miles. Sound design is by Breen McNamara. The executive producer was Huma Khalili. And we'll be back again this evening with the latest with Lucy Hoff. And Today in Focus will be back with you tomorrow morning.
This is The Guardian.